We're here at World Pork Expo. With me is Congressman Steve King of Iowa. And Congressman, we just heard the Secretary speak and made a relatively big announcement as far as the PED virus is concerned. I know that producers were concerned about this, about the idea of having to have mandatory reporting. And, you know, and plus now we're announcing some $30 million in federal funding. Your reaction to his announcement?
Well, we expected just about exactly what we heard here a few minutes ago from the Secretary. And, you know, I've listened to our producers, and I agree that they're concerned about the mandatory reporting. And it isn't so much the costs and the burden of mandatory reporting, because they are focused on getting rid of this virus, too. Who's got more investment in it than our producers? And so they're the first ones to step up. But they have a concern that there could be a Freedom of Information Act suits filed that could draw information out that could be used by the animal rights radical groups that are in the country that are funded by tens of millions of dollars that want to turn us all into vegetarians. I understand their concern. And so I would have preferred that we set this up at the state level. And the most of the states, and I don't know that I can say all of them, most of the states have a very effective Department of Agriculture, Secretary of Agriculture. And under those circumstances, I think we could have done better. Now I'm going to look at how we might be able to coordinate even better with the states that have the best operations. I know that here in Iowa, we had an issue when I was in the state senate of pseudo-rabies, and we were actually the last state to eradicate pseudo-rabies. The biggest reason was we're the largest pork state in the country, so it was a lot bigger job for us. And we put provisions in place that got us to the point where we eradicated pseudo-rabies. All of that talent, all that experience, all that network needs to be utilized in PED. And sometimes the federal government oversteps a little bit. But we're going to have to now see how we can best work together to get this problem solved.
Well, I haven't spoken to you since the final farm bill finally got done. I know you had some things that you felt pretty strongly about getting in there that didn't get in there. So what do you feel about the final version?
Well, I think that our grain producers, our feed grain producers in particular, but our row croppers, they're pretty well protected in this. And the number one thing going into it was to preserve a good risk management program. And the heart of that, of course, is crop insurance. And I think we succeeded in that. There's some things I would change with crop insurance, but we're working with a committee. And but the short end of the stick, and some would call that something else on the end of that stick, went to livestock. And it's too bad. It's too bad that we could not have at least made cool country of origin labeling voluntary. I would simply repeal it. It is a bad idea. We have a North American market at a minimum, and people can read the labels. If it matters, then the retailers and the packers will solve that. We don't need to do that in Congress. Second thing is the GPSA ruling. It's putting unnecessary burden on our producers, and it's wasting good animals that could otherwise be on the table and be marketed. And the third thing is my amendment that prohibits the states from regulating the means of production of our food products. I just can't imagine how there's a flaw in that rationale. My language goes directly to the Constitution, the Commerce Clause in the Constitution, and if you take the other side of the argument, then you would let California regulate the method of production, not the quality of the food. You know, there's a reason we have the USDA, and it's curious to me that the USDA would argue against my amendment, even while they're the ones that are putting their stamp of approval on the food. They're out of business if the states start to do this, and I don't want the states to have 50 different sets of regulations. They might even, you know, under that kind of rationale, that means that food can't travel from state to state. Our founding fathers put the Commerce Clause in the Constitution so we would not be having trade wars between the states. And it's curious to me that we're here talking about trade agreements and, let's say, celebrating the past trade agreement that we accomplished and talking about foreign trade. All the while the USDA is supporting California's trade protectionism. It's pretty hard to look the Japanese or the Koreans or the Panamanians or the Colombians in the eye and say, well, we want to have free trade with you, but we don't have free trade even between our own 50 states. That's the weakness in their argument.
Well, we could end up with that kind of situation also with biotechnology at this point, with GMOs. We've got counties in Oregon saying you can't grow GMOs. We've got GMO labeling issues. What do you think about there? Do you think that we need to have a point where we have a federal GMO rule?
I think that I think that we're going to have to address the labeling component of this. And as far as the federal GMO rule, I'd be apprehensive about that until I looked at all the aspects. One of the reasons we didn't take up the labeling issue, and lesser so the GMO issue and the farm bill, was because it's so complex. And you need to look at all of the contingencies possible and make sure that the language you write doesn't create an unintended consequence or an unnecessary loophole. And I don't have that all ironed out yet. I think we're moving forward, though, with a strong analysis of labeling language. And I didn't put the labeling into my bill / amendment in the farm bill because that was too complex. So let's see. But, what's going on with those people in Oregon? I mean, the people that represent out there, they say, well, you fly over the ag land in Oregon and most of it's taken up raising marijuana. Is this the second and third generation from the communes that went out there in the 60s and now they're visiting us with their politics? I don't want to go there. I love Iowa. I love the Midwest, our family farm values. And by the way, the Midwest is really broad and long. But you heard, I think, a good statement from the secretary here today about the contribution that farmers make to the rest of the country and the world. And I didn't hear him quite say the family farm is the best place in the world to raise a child, but it's absolutely true. And the next best place you can do that is the closest place you can get to the family farm.
Well, last question. Now that the Farm Bill is over, what do you see right now as the most important issues in Washington as far as general agriculture is concerned, either crop or livestock?
Well, we're going to continue to push those provisions that we didn't get into the Farm Bill. And, of course, that was the best vehicle, so it's awfully hard to find a must-pass piece of legislation that we could put any one of those three unsuccessful amendments on. But we need to look at some of the other things that are going on and outside of the crop and livestock side and into the nutrition side. And, the USDA has got something like $6.2 billion that's inappropriately, expenditures over the last fiscal year. We need to take a look at that. We need to take a look at what's going on with the nutrition side of this. And we've got states that are gaming the system on the Farm Bill already. We cannot have those governors thumbing their nose at the United States Congress and creating or taking advantage of an unintended loophole. We need to pull together on those things. And then, the implementation of this Farm Bill, we're just starting to pick up now the anticipation of how it's going to be implemented as the USDA really works, I think. They're focused on getting the rules written and getting it set for the implementation. That's a big part of this. I hope their ear is to the ground as producers see what's emerging. I hope they make those adjustments so that our producers can really work and live with this new Farm Bill.
What about some of the regulations coming out of EPA right now? Two in particular, the Waters of the U.S. and the RFS.
Well, RFS I can probably answer a little shorter. It is... The RFS is in statute, and there are waiver provisions in there for the EPA, but they need to comply with the waiver provisions. And so they use 2011 data, and I don't think that they complied with the language that was in the waiver provisions. So we've asked them in hearings and discussions and pleadings and in every way that we can, and letters that I and others have written and led on, to that we want them to go back and look at the 2013 data and go back and reread the law. Now, if they need to make those adjustments, and if they make those adjustments appropriately, they'll come back to what the law says. And by the way, I'd be have a little advice for the administration. If you don't like the law, come to Congress. We're the ones that change it. Don't be changing it with the administration or by executive edict or on a third-tier website of the U.S. Treasury. And by the way, all those things happen. So that's the RFS. Let me see. Yes, Waters of the U.S. It was one of the things that brought me into politics. Back in about 1994 or so, there was a cattleman walked into my construction office, my soil conservation construction office in Otterwald, Iowa, and he said, "Did you see this rule?" And no, I hadn't, and I read the rule, and it was from the Department of Natural Resources working, I think, at the behest of the EPA, and it said this: these streams, these 115 streams in Iowa, we declare to be protected streams in order to protect their natural riparian beauty, yada-da, and these streams, according to their geographical definition and, quote, waters hydrologically connected to them, close quote, shall be protected streams. when, you know, I had more hair then, and it went on fire when I read that. How can this be that they're going to have a takings, a Fifth Amendment property rights takings of declaring these streams to be protected streams? I'd floated every river in western Iowa in a canoe before it was ever popular, and I know a lot of them are drainage ditches. They don't have a natural riparian beauty. And so I went to these hearings, and I said, define hydrologically connected for me. And they would say, these are officers, agents that are there to present this to the public comment period. And they'd say, we don't know what that means. And I say, then take it out. And their answer, we can't. Well, you don't know what it means, but you know enough to know you can't take it out. How can that be? Well, because they were just agents that were there to walk around the state and listen to the public's complaints and record them. In any case, so I went to several of those meetings, and then I testified before the Iowa Senate Natural Resources Committee as a guy that, you know, just took off his blue jeans and his cowboy boots to put on a suit for that day. And I had 10 minutes to make my argument. And I got 3 minutes in. I just got really opened up to the topic. And there was a senator there that interrupted me, and he asked me a six-minute question. I opened my mouth to answer the question. The chairman gaveled and said, time's up.
Oh.
And I walked out of there, and this is exactly what went through my head. You dirty sow dogs, I'll be back. I didn't think I was going to run for the Senate. I just knew I wasn't going to take being shut down like that for an answer. Well, that's one of the things that launched me on this. Now here we are, waters of the United States. And let's see, significant nexus is the substitute term for hydrologically connected. Hydrologically connected, you can make a physics argument as to the definition of that. But significant nexus is different. The word significant will be interpreted by a bureaucrat. And however it's interpreted today, if that language stays in place, their son, their daughter, the next generation of bureaucrats will interpret that to their interest as well. You can't have subjective terms in this. And so we're in trouble with an overreaching federal government, since you asked.
All right, sir. I know you're busy. I'm going to let you go. A pleasure to meet you. Thank you
pleasure
so much.
To meet you.
All right. Thank you so much.
You probably can't use